Raising a Champion with John Boric.
All right, welcome into Raising a Champion. I'm your host, John Boric. With me today, the 2010 Ivy League Baseball Player of the Year. He was a three-year letterman at the University of Pennsylvania and recently inducted into the Penn Baseball Hall of Fame. Currently serves as the head baseball coach at Episcopal Academy, which he has served over the past 4 years. Tom Grandieri,
welcome
to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting when I read your profile and I looked at your family history. You had a brother who played basketball at Penn, another brother who played basketball at Gettysburg College, a third brother who played basketball at Widener. What did you just, you didn't like dribbling a basketball? You didn't like throwing it into a hoop? But somehow you decided you were going to go on a completely different course.
I didn't dribble it well enough, and I didn't shoot it well enough, clearly. But yeah, it was very interesting growing up. Most of my childhood was spent in the Catholic League gyms watching my brother, my oldest brother Fran, and my second oldest brother Chris play. And then Brian was kind of fast-tracked to kind of follow in the O'Hara footsteps. And then he was probably the first brother that was recruited, which was kind of a newer concept. And that takes us back to 2004 is when he graduated high school, so 1999, which seems like not too long ago. And then Malvern came into play, and the funny story is my dad basically said, you have to take Brian's younger brother, Tommy, or you're not going to get Brian. And they're like, all right, we'll take him. We know really nothing about him. Showed up the first day at Malvern a year after my brother Brian was there. I met the baseball coach, and he was like, you play baseball? I'm like, yeah, I play baseball. He's like, do you play basketball? I'm like, not well enough. And that's how it all happened. And, yeah, baseball's been with me ever since.
How was that with your parents? And what did they stress to when you got a house full of four boys? I'm sure their time was spent in shuttling and making sure that all the boys had equal playing time. Nobody was slighted. And what did they stress to you as parents?
Yeah, sure. So, and in fact, we had six total. So there's five boys. The youngest one is a boy, Daniel, who played club baseball at St. Joe's. And then my sister, who's directly below me, she had microfracture surgery on her knee in high school, so that kind of derailed her athletic career. But yeah, it was just that. There were six of us. Time had to be shared. My mom was a homemaker. My dad was a restaurant sales equipment guy. So the one thing I will say, which was consistent with all six of us, he was at every single game. So we didn't talk a lot about sports after the fact, just play hard, listen to the coach, go about your business. But the one thing that was constant was my dad was always there. He was always there. He never missed a game. His schedule worked around our schedule. And you could see that. You could feel it. And, you know, as I was the fourth brother, you know, it was kind of just how things operated. And it worked out nicely for
everybody.
Was he
the loudest voice in the stands?
No, you didn't hear much from my dad. He would do work calls, actually. You'd see him walk around on his phone. This was before, AirPods and different things like that. So you'd see him on his phone. But now he was pretty quiet. My mom actually actively, there's funny Little League stories, she'd actively root for the other teams to get hits off us because we were pretty decent athletes at a young age. So she kind of, quote, felt bad for other kids who might have struggled a little bit more. So there's all these glory stories of my mom actually like cheering for other people to get hits off her kids and stuff like that. So just funny stuff that you kind of laugh about now.
The challenge of being a student athlete is one thing, and I know that, you know, being at Texas Tech for 4 years, but to do it at the University of Pennsylvania, because you have to be a student number one.
Sure.
It's not where, hey, we have a tutor set up for you and this, and hey, just make sure the grades are good because we need you out here on the, you're going to be a student, and if you happen to play sports, that's great.
Sure.
Tell me about the challenge that came with juggling those two things and really excelling at both. Because not only were you an excellent baseball player, but you were also, I believe, an academic All-American.
Sure. People might not believe that, but but yes.
Well, that's only your old teachers who don't believe it, right?
That's exactly right. I did have help from my brother Brian, who was also a basketball player at Penn. So he gave me some guidelines on kind of how to stack your schedules a little bit. So we took a lot of classes kind of during the fall, and then we would lighten the load during the spring. So the big thing was we always went to class. You know, we're not probably natural intellects, but we were in the classroom. We got to know the teachers. They saw our faces. They did things like that. But Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. It's a full schedule pretty much all year. I would say that's probably the different expectation with a college sport than a high school sport is your expectations of being a student athlete last pretty much the entirety of your year. So there's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of time to get in trouble, which is good for me. You know, it kept me on the straight and narrow, but it also allowed me to kind of just focus on the things I needed to, because at the end of the day, I do like academics, I do like learning, but I loved the sport of baseball, so I didn't want to, you know, sacrifice the academic side to lose the baseball side, and as a result, they both ended up working out pretty nicely in the classroom and on the baseball field.
Yeah, you had to develop structure at some point in your life. I don't know, did that come, you know, during the middle school years, high school years? Because, look, when you're taking on a course load and then you're playing baseball, a student athlete, and maybe there's a buddy who wants you to go down, you know, and get a drink or whatever, have a good time with the guys, you got to make sacrifices, right? So where did that structure come into place?
Yeah, I would say it probably started in grade school to a degree. And I think it also, obviously, I was fortunate to be a younger brother. So I kind of saw the right way to do it sometimes with my brothers, the wrong way to do it, and then eventually how they kind of got onto their own path. And then in high school at Malvern Prep, you know, you had a set schedule, but if you didn't, you know, live up to the expectations, you lost, you know, extracurricular activities. I mean, to me, it's a little bit of, you know, Catholic guilt to a degree. It's if you can't do this, you can't do the thing you really want to do. But I think it did start early. And then I think, you know, having a modicum of success kind of all the way through, you know, it's like, why would you mess with that model? Just keep going with the thing that kind of works. But it does take serious sacrifice. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that didn't make it through their four-year baseball career at Penn because they just couldn't figure out how to do both. Or they prioritized spring break or missing out on spring break to, you know, over baseball. Or they just wanted to go out all the time. You know, their grades suffered, and then their grades suffered, so then they had to go to after school, you know, after class activities, which cut into baseball practice time. To your point earlier, Penn, they don't really look at you as an athlete. No. They look at you as a student. So, yeah, it's a real thing, and, you know, I was fortunate to get through, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I will say you kind of come to enjoy those things to a degree, and that was helpful as well.
Yeah, I'm sure you fell into a routine. When you're a freshman, you're wide-eyed. You don't know what to expect, and then once you get into that routine, you know what to expect. You come your second, third, and fourth year.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
How much did the brothers push you? I mean, there's obviously, you see it all the time in the families where you have, you know, the brothers, just that competitive aspect of it. You know, if one is succeeding at college doing this, you don't want to be the one that's going to let your parents down.
Sure. Yeah, it was definitely helpful. So, and you know, you can't really script that because, you know, it was my parents who had the six kids. I was just the fourth of the brothers. But you kind of, if you're paying attention, you can glean things from everybody. So, you know, my oldest brother, you know, he wasn't in the weight room, but he was just tough. So he got by on kind of pure toughness and grit, if you will. So you saw that and you're like, all right, that works a little bit. And then my second oldest brother is more calm, cool, collected. And, you know, he got through on that. And then I think Brian on the basketball court probably took both of those and then kind of saw like, hey, like if you get your body right and you get in shape, that's going to help too. And then by the time I was around, I paired up with a couple buddies in high school who were always in the weight room, who were always hitting after practice. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to give it a go. And then it worked out nicely. But I think it's, you just kind of see it and you experience it and you kind of take the good stuff and the bad stuff as well, and you kind of try to find your own path.
So here you are, and you're at Penn. You're putting together. You're going to have an impressive diploma. At what point did you decide, you know what, I'm going to take my 4 years at Penn, and I'm going to be a head baseball coach? I'm sure that wasn't the plan when you went in, but here you are. You know, because your love of baseball trumped whatever it was that you were studying at an Ivy League school.
Sure. So I do have a regular day job, and my wife might contest that a little bit because I spend just as much probably time on the baseball aspect as I do my regular career. But yeah, it's a funny story. I think your love for something at some point may dissipate or may stop. But I think if you love something enough, you try to find any way to kind of stay involved. So, I mean, to make a long story short, to fill my gap of not playing baseball, I joined a semi-competitive slow-pitch softball league, which for the first year I kind of think I was numb to the idea. And it was, you know, you go out, you go have some beers after, have some wings. You met 10 new guys that you never met before. Everything was great. And then the second year we went to some tournament in the middle of Pennsylvania and things got a little bit chippy. And I was like, this is just slow pitch softball. Like, you can't even throw. Everybody has to throw the ball high in the air. There's no fastballs. So then I subsequently quit after that. And then my actual high school baseball coach and I had kind of fell in and out. And he was a big mentor for me. We reconnected. And what we have now is what I call my famous my famous 4-hour lunch. So we met for lunch. We caught up, and he said, "Hey, you know, I always thought this about you. I'm looking for an assistant coach." He was at Episcopal Academy at the time. "Hey, you know, give this a chance." At the time, I didn't have any children. My wife was like, "Sure, like slow pitch softball sounds terrible. You get home late at night, you're playing slow pitch softball. This seems a little bit more healthier. You know, you're coaching high school kids, you're doing the thing you love." And then, honestly, from there, the rest is, you know, as they say, is history right now. And I'm going to try to keep it going for as long as my wife will
have. We'll let you.
Exactly.
Until you need to start toting your kids
exactly
to the sporting
right
events.
Sure.
That day will come.
Sure.
As a head coach, you're now, you've completed 4 years, as we talked about at the top of the show, 4 years going into year five. What have you learned about yourself as a manager from the time that you first started, year one, to where you are now? How you learned about yourself, how you've changed, how you structure practices and stuff?
Sure, a lot. And if you had some of the kids, so I finished, 4 years. So I basically took one class. This will be the first time I took a class from their freshman year through their senior year. And I'd say if you polled all of them, they'd probably say that, or hopefully say that I did grow, as a coach and just a person. Because at the end of the day, I think now more than ever, kids need that. They need to know that you care about them. And I think if you genuinely do, it kind of shines through. But I will say the first few years, I guess a couple years, 2 years, I would say I ruled a little bit more firmly, and when I say rule is the wrong word, but I probably coached a little bit more firmly, which is traditionally what I was coached like. And I think I'm not going to totally say it was a bad idea. I think it laid a decent foundation that, you know, I'm here to not necessarily win, but we're gonna do it right. I think this is, you know, when I've had successful or been a part of successful things, this is how things typically operated. But I think what I did is I kind of misread the room a little bit, and I think it was just a lot too much too soon. And then subsequently, I think the past 2 years, and I think it's easy to say for me because we've had more success, but I really do think it was just that transition is, you know, I gave most of the kids a lot more, you know, leeway or more of a sense of, you know, it was their program. If they wanted to kind of get it to the next level, they needed to kind of take on more. And what ultimately happened was there was a lot more coaching inside the players. And I was actually able to take a step back, which was great on all fronts. It was great for home life. It was great for play on the field. It was great for the kids. It was great for relationships. So I think I'll hopefully be able to figure out, you know, in years to come, you know, when to maybe put it down a little bit or when to kind of just let them run and see how they figure it out. So I think that's what happened this year.
It's interesting what you said there at the beginning, though, is that you thought that maybe the way that you coached them, you were a little bit too firm.
Definitely.
And we almost learned that generation. I'm in my early 50s. You're in your mid-30s. And even, you know, in a 10-year period, it seems like every year, how we're coached is a little bit different. They didn't care about players like they ask you to now, but you learn that for kids who are kind of coming up, and now the kids in the 10 to 15, they've got to be, I don't know if the right word is coddled, but you have to handle them a certain way than even when you came through.
Definitely. Yeah, that's probably the buzzword, and it has a negative connotation. I don't think it's negative. Like, you know, I coddle my own kids. I'm sure you coddle your own kids. It's not necessarily a bad thing. I think the thing is, it is different. But I think if you just show them how much you care, or kind of present to them, hey, you know, this is why I feel this way, or this is why I feel strongly this way, they tend to understand a little more. I think when I played in high school and college, like there was no reason for a coach to tell me this is why we're doing anything, right? So when I first started, I was like, I don't need to tell anybody any reason why I'm doing a drill or why we...
I'm doing it. Do it.
Yeah.
Don't question it.
Correct. Right? Like, why are we bunting? Why would you ask a coach why we're bunting? Yeah. The coach wanted to bunt. But now, I think if you just say, hey, this was my thought process, and then on top of it, I think the one thing I've done more is I've admitted, and I didn't really hide from it before. I just was not used to it or never kind of came from it. But I admit a lot of my faults. And as a result, I think it just makes everybody feel more comfortable because if I can admit it, their expectation, I never expected them to be perfect, but they might have thought like, hey, the coach has never said he's done anything wrong. So, I mean, I admit mistakes on a daily basis, you know, obviously a weekly basis, a game-to-game basis. And I say, hey, this was the rationale. This is what the thing that was going through my head. You know, maybe it'll work this time. If it doesn't work this time, but another situation arises in 2 weeks and this, you know, play's called again, this is why we're doing it. So if anything, I look at it now as a preparation thing, but I will say in the first 2 years, I don't think I said sorry about a lot of things, but I think over the past 2 years, I think I've said sorry more, and not even necessarily sorry, but kind of, hey, you know, I might have botched this one up, and this was my thought process, but if it doesn't work, we're going to change things, we're going to try to adapt.
Yeah, when you and I were high school athletes, I didn't even have a cell phone back in the day. Mm-hmm. You may have just started to have maybe you had a flip phone.
My junior year, I got my first cell phone and I could play Snake on it.
Snake,
if you remember
it, yes.
That game. So
now, their girlfriend could break up with them while they're out of practice, or somebody will tell them through social media that they're not adequate enough, or whatever the case may be. So there's another layer of pressure and stress that comes with being a high school athlete that was completely non-existent when you and I were going through this.
100%. So I'm fortunate in that, not to say that I'm young, but I'm on, I would say, the younger side. And I think if you see this most recent wave of coaching, not only at the high school level, the collegiate level, I mean, look at the NFL. They have two guys that are, you know, 38 and 37 years old coaching the NFL. It's probably something that nobody would have dreamt of. But it does give me a little bit more perspective, I think, on what the young men in my case are doing or going through. And then the fact that my brother just turned 26 this year. So he's, you know, 3-4 years removed from college. So I'm still in that world a little bit because he's got a lot of buddies that live locally. So I kind of see what the 26 year olds are doing. Not that 26 and 16 is the same, but it's closer. It's a lot. And people are just nasty. I mean, plain and simple. Like, I mean, I remember going to games in high school and you would hear a mom or a dad or another high school peer kid say something, but then that was it. You probably never saw him again. You never talked to him again. But now you have, you know, 50-year-old people on the internet saying this kid it stinks and so and saying things that are extremely hurtful. And then you can't contact them. And then if you engage them, then you're just as bad as they are. And you're in a lose-lose proposition. So yeah. Our adage is, and we can't get around it, but we had, like, you know, Snapchat issues, which is like, I mean, to like the around the league.
But you have to bring these things up and talk about these things, right?
100%.
As a manager, because you're not managing a game, you're managing personalities. And
the game is an afterthought. That's and my one buddy who's an assistant coach with me, he's actually running a youth travel program, and he's the head coach. And he called me after the first practice and was like, "Man, this is hard." And I'm like, yeah, and I'm like, 13-year-olds is a little bit different than high school age kids because parents are still hanging around practice. We don't have it's not like Texas football. We don't have parents hanging around practice. But yeah, all eyes, all attention. There's just a lot of, you know, angst and responsibility, and I want to get to the next spot as quickly as possible. There's not a lot of living in the moment anymore. The kids have to they're just getting pushed to go to heights that they don't know about, and the people who are trying to get them there, I think in a lot of cases, don't know a lot about either. So it's just this constant struggle to a degree. But I think if you lean into it and you try to engage the kids and tell them, you know, you're there for you, you can call me at any time. I mean, I will say, to your point, I would have never thought to call my high school baseball coach ever, ever, ever. I would have never thought to call my college baseball coach. I would say,
but you get those calls.
75 to 85% of the kids on the team text me fairly regularly.
Wow.
And the 15% that don't, they'll text another coach. So I would say
growing up, I don't even know if I would have wanted to approach a coach outside of the playing field, much less text them. But it's just another element of how times and the era has changed.
Sure. But there's good stuff, too. I mean, they'll send me pictures of them going to, you know, the high school football game or at the Phillies game or the Sixers game or at the Flyers game, and they're all hanging out. So, it's not all – so if you lean into it and if you kind of open the dialogue, I think I'm hopeful that if something bad happens, which I hope it doesn't, like, I'll be an outlet for them. I'll be a resource for them. And at the end of the day, that has much more, you know, consequences or effects on the children than the baseball game on Tuesday and Friday. It really does.
So when you're looking at athletes to join your program now, do you want the athlete, the player who's now specializing in baseball, wants to be a full-time baseball player only, or do you want the two or the three sport star, the three sport athlete that's playing a myriad of sports? Because, you know, there's some parents that want their kid into sports specialization at the age of 10. And the more I see it, you know, they want, if you can play and you're good to play other sports as long as you can.
Sure. I would say my personal opinion is I like the multi-sport athlete. But with that being said, I think the current construct of any team at the high school level probably has a blend of all of them. So in a perfect world, you know, I'd like to, you know, because you learn things. And I mean, I'll put the story back on me. And this, I tell the kids this every year. So by the time they're juniors and seniors, they're probably tuned out. But, you know, I was a grandeur from a basketball family. So everybody, when I went to Malvern, was like, oh, he's got to be a good basketball player. I was a set a pick roll, maybe make a corner three, play really hard defense, score 6, 7, 8 points a game. By anybody's standards today, I was the ultimate role player. But I learned so much as a role player playing basketball that helped me in baseball. And then when I was, you know, hitting leadoff or hitting second or hitting third, I knew that the guy who was going to hit 7th, 8th, and 9th was going to have just as much of an impact on the game as I did as the 5th, 6th guy on the basketball team. So I could lean on them and just say, hey, you know, stay in there, hang in there. Or if you're a bench guy, you know, coming off the bench, you can't learn those things if you're just specialized in one sport. You don't learn failure. You don't learn how to not be the guy. You don't learn how to, you know, integrate with other people who might be better than you. And if anything else, I think the mental side of playing multiple sports is you hear different things, you learn different things. You know, a coach will tell you one thing that you can kind of apply to a different sport. So a blend is nice. I mean, I think it's going more towards the you know, singular centric. But I would say our most successful athletes since we've been coaching play multiple sports, which is also an Episcopal Academy model as well. So it aligns there.
Yeah, you've been doing this, as we said, 4 years, going on 5 years now. So you got a pretty good sample size of the kids that come in. Of, you know, the kids that you have, and obviously, you know, you have to cite specific kids, but who are ready for the high school experience, and how many of those still need time in terms of learning your way or learning, because now you're taking a step up from whether they played club ball somewhere else to now high school ball, but they're ready, or they have the foundation in place in order to be successful.
Yeah. So it's a great question. And the reason it's a great question is, and I mean, I talk to my coaches about this all the time. That this is, I think, a podcast is my perfect forum. Is the thing with the youth athlete, especially getting into the high school ranks, is, and I'll speak to baseball because that's our sport. So we're the third season of high school sports in Pennsylvania. So by the time I see them or meet them in their 7th, 8th grade years, by the time they get to their spring of their freshman year, I mean, you could already see the leaps and bounds of growth in just that, in those seasons alone, because they're playing basketball, they're playing soccer, they're running track, and they're like, oh my gosh, there's 18, 19-year-old young men and women that I'm competing against. So you go from this pond that is everybody kind of looks the same, and then there's a few outliers, and you're kind of like, all right, well, that makes sense. Like, they're the outliers. But then it's like when you get into this big group of all the people who look the same, but they're 4 years of lifting ahead of you. They're 4 years of training ahead of you. They're 9 seasons of sports ahead of you. You get in there, and you're like, whoa. So to our credit, I think we play as a, you know, at the Episcopal for the baseball team, we'll play the kid who's ready to play, irregardless of, you know, age and status. But I will say it's the true success tends to happen later in high school. And I think that's across the board. I mean, we've played against guys that have gone on to get drafted, you know, guys that have gone on to Power Five, you know, baseball schools. And I remember them as freshmen. And, you know, you're like, whoa, this kid's going to be a player. They're not typically the player they are, you know, for another 2 to 3 years. So that's the other thing, too, is I think people have to, you know, there's a saying of, you know, be where your feet are. A lot of people are saying that it's like a cliche that's going around. I think it's pretty important to just realize that, though, like, you got to be where your feet are. You're 14, so you're going to be 14. You can't transport yourself to be 17. You can't transport yourself. You have to just go through the 14 to 15, the 15 to 16, the 16 to 17. So yeah, it's a real thing. The growth and the maturation, and then eventually getting kind of through the high school experience is a process.
Another thing that I found, I think that it's a skill set that you can transfer, whether it's in the workplace or anything, is be versatile.
Sure.
Don't just learn one task at work. Learn a multitude of tasks. Make yourself almost what I like to call indispensable.
Sure.
Baseball players don't go into a season saying, I'm only a catcher, I'm only this. Take ground balls in the infield. Take fly balls in the outfield. Do things to where you never know, you're going to have an injury. But if you're a versatile type player, you're more valuable. And how important is it to stress that amongst some of your athletes to say, look, yeah, maybe there are some that are great infielders.
Sure.
But look, if you're one of the best hitters, you'll find a place for them.
Totally. That's well said. And the thing is, between a combination of the kids wanting to do that themselves, and I think a lot of it does go back to home. So, you know, parents are around, or, you know, caregivers are around the kids much more than we are. So you'll kind of know if that conversation's already been had, or you'll quickly know that that conversation has never been broached ever at home. The one that's never been broached is much more interesting to have, because you're breaking news to somebody that you never thought you'd have to break to at 15 years old. But I think it is very important. And I also think by the time they kind of get through the season, they sometimes, and this was kind of probably the transition from my first 2 years to the next 2 years, is if you give them a chance, I think they start to see it through their own eyes. And that conversation's a lot easier. So, hey, how you feeling? What are you thinking? Then they'll come to me and say, hey, coach, you think I can get some outfield reps? Like, we got some guys at shortstop that, you know, I don't think I'm probably going to beat out over the next 2 or 3 years. And you're like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you run well. Like, hey, coach, like, you know, we don't really have a lot of guys, you know, who come in at the end of the game that are, you know, defensive stalwarts or base runners or pinch runners. Like, do you think, you know, there's anything I can work on? Yeah, sure. And the nice thing is, very recently, we've been having more of those conversations. So I think the way I did it the first 2 years, probably, hopefully, I think I'm trying to give myself a little bit of credit, has kind of helped matriculate towards this. But anytime you can go into anything with an open mind, like you said, and be a, you know, a pinch runner to start, and then, you know, you steal a base, and you're like, wow, we got to get this kid in the lineup. Like, if he gets on, he's going to steal second, and he's going to score from second, or we got to put him in here, or we got to do that, or he's really good at first base. Like, his bat hasn't come along yet, but, you know, if the ball comes to first base, or he's got to make a pick in the seventh inning, he's the right guy. So, and anytime you play, you build confidence, and that's all we're trying to do, is just build confidence and confidence.
As a head coach, are you more of a hitting guy, a defense guy, or a pitching guy?
So yeah. I think baseball itself, I'd argue at every level, is one up the middle. So I'll even put it back on my face. So people are like, oh. But I eventually got moved from center field to right field. So I actually ended up not being in the middle side of things. But I think if you catch well, you pitch well, you play the middle infield well, and your center fielder can play, I think you have the dynamics of a great baseball team. But I think what happens is, if you play enough games or you go through enough practices, you realize that the beauty of baseball is it's an individual sport inside of the ultimate team sport, because you could have the best day ever, but if the other 8 guys just not having a great day, you're probably not going to win. So we like the middle of the field, and I think, honestly, if you take a backup shortstop, you can move him to third base. You can move him to left field. You can move him to right field. If you take the backup second baseman, I think you can kind of spread them around. So yeah, we like to work up the middle and then kind of fill the outer spots.
Yeah, It's interesting. I see so many really young kids, you know, you start in T-ball. My two boys, only one of them decided to play baseball, and they only did it for 1 year. I wanted to get, when you're the age of 6, 7, 8, I wanted them to be active. I want them to be running, soccer, lacrosse. You know, my youngest got into hockey, so he's constantly moving, sure. moving. It's really a thinking man's game. Situational. You know, what if the ball's hit here, or if it's in, and that's a really tough thing to teach.
Sure.
At that age level.
Yes.
You know, you just want them out there fun, enjoying themselves. You're going to know. You're going to get there. You got boys.
Oh, I'm there.
You got boys.
My oldest one's 7. We just went through it. You know, baseball's slow too. Baseball's not only typically slow for the kids. If you're playing, it doesn't feel slow, but it's definitely a slow sport for parents as well. So, I think the impasse is.
Oh, it was brutal.
Oh,
I was watching. It was brutal. I had to do everything in my power to not look at my phone and read something and wait for him to get back.
And he probably started at the end of March, beginning of April, and in Pennsylvania it's 48 degrees and it's raining, and your kid's crying because he hit it off the end of the bat.
It stings.
It's a bad beginning of spring sport in Pennsylvania. But the thing with that is, and I totally agree with you. And it's something I've been racking my brain about, and I think I'm sure a lot of dads and moms have been racking their brains about it too, is I think it's too structured at that early of an age. I think they should just have skills and not, you know, put a kid at second base, because what is second base? I mean, if you ask, I think my kid understands baseball, he's around it, but like 2 years ago, he didn't, you know, he'd run to third, he'd skip first base, you know, they go from first to third, they cut across. So at the end of the day, but you want them, just like anything else at youth age, whatever the sport is, you just want them to keep on coming back. Like, I want to go to baseball next season. I want to go to soccer next season. I want to go to lacrosse next season. That's, to me, that is the end goal, especially in youth sports, like super youth. And I think, hopefully, it's transitioning. There's some youth local little leagues around our way that I think do an exceptional job at it. I think some others, they're just conditioned to kind of do it the way they've always done it. But the numbers are starting to dwindle because people are going to the hockeys because you're always skating around. You can see your son or daughter flying around the ice, flying around, loosely speaking. Mm-hmm. But they're skating. They're getting their, you know, they're getting their stick on the puck. And, you know, lacrosse, they're getting ground balls. They're running with it. They're scoring mm-hmm. a goal. Baseball is, it's a hard sport. It's a slow sport. And if the kid isn't into it, which is typically likely at 6, 7 years old, it just makes all those things a lot harder.
But it also goes to the point of play more or train more?
Play more.
Yeah.
Play more. At that age, I think it's a play more. It's get out and play, less structure. You know, if a ball is at shortstop, you know, in a week, they might not know to field it, throw it to second base because there's a guy on first base. But if they see that same scenario 8 times over the next week, they'll be like, oh, I've seen this before. And you can't always just say, hey, you know, John, go over here. Tom, go over here. Billy, come over here. We're gonna script everything. The beauty of it is it's an unscripted game. So you can talk about it after the fact, I think, but you kind of let those things go out and you kind of teach inside the moment, or at least that's my personal take on it.
For the first time ever, I was up in Williamsport this year to catch. You've never been. You're lifelong Pennsylvania. You've never been to the Little League World Series,
huh? It's going to be a bucket list. Even my buddies who...
You were certainly at the level where you were trying to get there.
Sure, we didn't get out of districts. But and some of my buddies who, you know, they love baseball, but I don't think they play baseball past Little League. They've been to Williamsport like 15 times. So it's kind of a running joke in the friend group, too. So I'm going to take my son up soon.
Yeah, it's a great experience. But I was watching that team from Hawaii. You're talking 12s and 13s and all of these kids, just the level of talent and how well they could hit it. And the game I saw, 5 home runs, but it seems like that is as much the parents' dream as it is the kids' dream.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I'm sure you've witnessed that. And look, it's not just for baseball, but it's any youth sports that a lot of these parents are trying to get their kids to the level because they are living vicariously through them.
Sure.
So I don't know how much have you seen that element of youth sports change over the last 10, 15 years?
So I think it might come back a little bit full circle to like when we talked about social media. My guess is that it happened back in the day, if you will. I just don't think you saw it, or there was really a forum other than like your closest friend that you would even begin to have those conversations with in fear of, does this person think I'm crazy? But I'll probably be hypocritical to a degree. But my older brothers, their kids are my nephews and nieces, and their friends are, they're older than my kids. So they're getting closer to high school age. You know, most of them are in like the 10, 11, 12 year old range. And they'll come to me just because I'm in this world a little bit. And my only piece of advice is do you go to a Villanova, this is another stock speech of mine. Like, do you go to Villanova basketball games when I do my parent meetings and the kid meetings? Every single person in this area has been to a ton of Villanova basketball games. They're great. They've won national championships. They're local. It's awesome. It checks all the boxes. But I'm like, have you ever been to a Villanova baseball game? Nobody goes. But Villanova baseball is the sport you want to play in my instance. Well, why wouldn't you go to the Villanova baseball game? Like, so, well, you know, we just don't go. And, you know, it's not much of an event. I usually go with my wife and my other kids. And it's like, all right, well, take your son who wants to play baseball. And better yet, like, have you ever been to a high school baseball game in the area? No, I've never been to a high school baseball game. I'm like, well, come to our game. Like, you could sit in the dugout. You could sit next to the dugout. I love it. Like, anybody who can come to a high school baseball game is more than most people come to a high school baseball game. And some people will take me up on it, some people won't. But my point is, your perceived, you know, view of who your child is and who your child is compared to your current peers, comparatively to what else is going on in this kind of this big world that we live in, is drastically different. Like, I even say to the guys I coach with, like, and my son's 7, do I think he'll be a decent baseball player? Maybe, maybe not. He seems to be fairly athletic. I will say, though, the guys that I coach and the guys that we coach against, I mean, these kids are unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. So it's not to say that you sell the farm and you only play baseball. It's you just say, hey, like, there's a long road ahead. And this road is what this kid, who I said was unbelievable, took as well. Like, I know for a fact. I know him personally. Mm-hmm. I know he played basketball. I know he played lacrosse until he was 10 years old. I knew he played XYZ sport. And then, you know, but see it for yourself. Like, we face kids in the Interac, and our kids included. We'll get there hopefully soon. But, I mean, we faced, which is wild to think. I mean, we faced a kid who's going to South Carolina who threw 92 this year. We faced a kid who's going to UVA who was up to 88, 89. We faced another kid who's going to Louisville who was up to 88. I mean, 88 miles per hour in a batter's box from 60 feet, 6 inches. Like, I want to put our dads and moms in a simulated environment and be like, this is what your son is dealing with. The last thing he wants to hear in the car is like, why did you swing at the slider in the dirt? Because he's like, Dad, the kid was throwing 90 miles per hour at 17, 18 years old. So the long and short of it, and hopefully I kind of stayed on, you know, task there, is I just think people need to go out and experience kind of the local world at like a 3 to 4 age increment higher. I think I experienced that because I had 3 older brothers. That was just how our family was constructed. So I knew when I went to high school, there was a lot of work to do. My oldest brother was playing hoops against Eddie Griffin. You know, my brother, you know, that was the heyday of the Catholic League. I mean, it was just 6'7", 6'8", NBA guys. You know, my brother Brian was at, they were playing GA. It was, you know, Ted Skuchis, Lee Melchione. I mean, their whole starting five, Mike Slattery, they all went Division I. 5 guys on one single team. Sean Singletary was UVA, NBA. It's, you just got to get to high school. You got to get to high school games. I mean, that's, and hopefully you'll go and we'll have more people in the stands. It'll be great.
And those are all really good points. You mentioned some of the parent player meetings that you have individually with each of the families. And it doesn't really matter what sport it is that we're discussing. If it was soccer, hockey, baseball, lacrosse, you could make it a 12-month program. You could make it a 12-month commitment to where you're going to summer camps, you're going to showcases, scouted tournaments. Do you worry about some of that when it's during the off season? Because it's so easy, and you see it so often, that whether it's the player or the parent, but they want to be chasing that thing. They want to make sure that their child is seen by the right people, the important people out there.
Sure. I had two phone conversations on the way over here. It's enticing. Like, you get these emails, you get these phone calls, and a lot of times, I will say, the people who seem more stressed out in those conversations, it's typically their first child or first child in that particular sport. So it could be a daughter plays this, or a son was a hockey player and the other son's a baseball player. So we know how the hockey Lance construct is. We don't really know the baseball construct. To me, you have to just keep getting better before you put yourself out there. You know, it's not to say, like, don't apply for the job that you really want, but, like, if you wanted to get into a job outside of baseball, you're not interviewing for the CEO job unless you start your own company. You're going to interview for the entry-level job, and then you're going to be indispensable, and you're going to get another role, and you're going to get another role, and you're going to get another role. And by the time you're in your second or third role, you might want to show yourself to the, you know, hiring manager that gets you to the next level. So those are the conversations I have. I try to equate it differently than baseball. Like, you know, for the parents out there, you've been afforded at Episcopal, you've probably done well for yourself, or you've done well for yourself and you value education. So this is why you're sitting in front of me. So, you know, when you first took your job, you probably didn't take the job that everybody wants or everybody aspires to and the salary that you've ultimately gotten to. So the same with the kid. Let's just kind of put good work in, put the right work in, get them around the right people, get the right foundation. And this is where the parents come into play, and I'm a parent myself, and I'm sure I'm going to do it too. So that's why I always feel like I got to take a step back, is the kids don't know any different. They just do what your parents are told for the most part, or at least that's the way that I think most kids handle themselves. If my dad or mom told me that we're going to go to this, well, I'm going to go to that. So I just try to say to the kids, hey, why are you doing this? Well, so-and-so is doing this. Well, why so-and-so doing that? Well, their parents said that they're going to do all this stuff all throughout the summer. So then I get the conversation, well, you know, John's mom and dad said, we're going to go fly to Georgia all summer and we're going to play all summer. Well, John is going to be a first-round draftable prospect. He's a Power 5 guy off the top of the bat. You're going to struggle to find JV innings. What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. So, and that conversation happens frequently. The only problem I get from it is I think that if everybody was working together and everyone was being truthful with one another, we could solve a lot of the issues that go on now. Mm-hmm. But nobody wants to be the bad guy. I mean, my joke with my buddies, I always say I have a rod in my neck. I feel like I have, like, so much stress in my neck. They're like, you got a rod in your neck today? And I'm like, I'm going to pull the rod out. But the reason I think I have a rod in my neck is those conversations are terrible. Yes. They're terrible for a reason, because delivering bad news is just never good. But when I have those conversations, it's not to say that nothing will never happen. It's just we reset the proper expectations. I honestly feel like the rod is lifted from my neck. So those two conversations I had today, like, the both of them should be fine prospects. They're both 14 years old. So, no, we're just get in the weight room, make sure they're hitting, make sure they're eating, make sure they're going to bed. If they want to do extra work, one of the coaches, one of us can meet them, or we can put them in contact with so-and-so. So I just think if everybody was working together, not chasing something else that somebody else has, I think we could kind of get back in line a little
bit. And that's difficult when you hear that somebody at a competing school or somebody is already committed to this university.
100%.
And he's still got two or three years left in his high school career.
100%.
And he's like, how did he already get the commitment? Why is a college coach already looking at him?
Yep.
And that's what I think the hard part. It's I don't know. When I was going through all of that, it was National Signing Day, and you didn't know what was going on until that point.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think to that point is, you know, colleges, and that landscape has changed dramatically too. So, you know, college coaches, most of them are public universities. So you see how much these men and women are making. And don't get me wrong, it's a really hard job, and the schools are making a lot of money. So I'm not saying they shouldn't, but their job, or they, if they're good, their job is to, you know, evaluate talent, right? And their also job is to project how these people project. So if the you know, 6 foot or 5'11 freshman who has a 6'4 dad and a 6'2 mom, you know, is a pretty good baseball player now, they're hedging on the fact that he might be 6'4" and his mom played, you know, field hockey in college and his dad was a, you know, Division III basketball player. So there's bloodlines there. Like, there's a lot that goes into it because there's a lot of time to be had, money to be given out, energy, jobs, security. Like, I'm fortunate, you know, I coach the high school baseball team, but it's not my career. So I don't feel like, you know, in the next second I could lose my job and my family would be moved. You know, I appreciate Episcopal, everything it's for, but I do it because I love it and I want to be around the kids. You flip that on its head, college is a totally different beast. This is how people make their livelihood. They've been, you know, grinding at it for years and years. Most of them in the baseball community make very, very little to no money, especially on the assistant coach side of things. So, yeah, their job is to try to make things work. So if they identify that, they might be wrong and they might swing and miss, you know, no pun intended, but that's their prerogative. You can't make that coach like your son over somebody else's son. So I think it's just a little more self-reflection, a little bit more honest talk, and a little bit, hey, this isn't the end of the world. Like, just have a conversation with your kids, I think would go a long way.
Yes,
I know it's, and I say this, and it's not easy. It's not easy. I haven't had a lot of in-depth life conversations with my kids yet. They're 7, 4, and 2.
But we're getting there. We're a year away.
We're getting close. But I talk to parents who are going through that, and that's genuinely. Typically, my one piece of advice is like just have the hard conversation. It's not going to probably go well, but I think the kids are smart enough. I think they're cerebral enough these days to kind of understand. You know, if you give them a little bit, their world hopefully won't come crashing down on them.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you. We're going to hold this for another time. We'll have you back on about pitching and arms and stuff. I grew up a big Nolan Ryan fan.
Sure.
And I don't understand how we can't produce more Nolan Ryans these days. You know, we're safeguarding everybody. And I get all of that. Well, you know that. But that's something that we can get into.
The almighty dollar might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. But that's something that we can discuss the next time we have you on.
That'd be awesome.
But that's, thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you for
coming on. It's baseball still, to me, America's pastime, one of the greatest sports out there. The Natural is one of my favorite movies, and this is a great area for baseball and producing homegrown talent,
you know,
up here in the Northeast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was a blast. Yeah. This is my first podcast. I'm a consumer of a lot of podcasts, but I've definitely never been on one, so I appreciate it very much.
You can check off that box.
Thank you. It's been good.
We end the show every week with our quote or inspirational thought of the day. And for this week, good leadership requires you to surround yourself with people of diverse perspectives who can disagree with you without fear of retaliation. I'm sure you've learned that in your four years as a manager of a high school program. Tom, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to Raising a Champion.
You've been listening to Raising a Champion with John Borick.